Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 438, titled Christmas Bushes, Business as Unusual. This is being recorded on December 15th of the year 2003. Yesterday, the capture of Saddam Hussein was announced, and this is being heralded as a major change, perhaps, for Iraq. Well, remains to be seen exactly what takes place in Iraq. But as we've noted in numerous broadcasts, the business connections of the Bush family go to all of the various oil-producing companies or countries in Iraq, companies too, and those relationships transcend ideology. During the concluding part of the previous side, we took a look at an article with which we're going to begin this broadcast. That article is from the Financial Times of December 12th of 2003. The title is Web of Connections, The Personal and Business Ties Between Texas, Washington, and the Middle East. It's by Stephen Fiedler and Thomas Caton. It, again, is from the Financial Times of December 12th of 2003. And this article focuses primarily on Neil Bush and his relationship with a Syrian-American named Jamal Daniel. Jamal likes to ingratiate himself with family members of whoever's in power, the U.S. businessman says. He squired Neil Bush around. Then he also got close to Papa Bush, George H., when he came back to Houston. Socially, there were pictures together, and he was very supportive of George W.'s campaign when he ran for governor. Another person, a Jordanian lawyer who works on international business transactions in the Middle East, describes Mr. Daniel as, quote, a wheeler-dealer, somebody who uses the name of the Bush family to get business and to encourage people to do business with him. Working closely with Mr. Bush and Mr. Daniel has been a third man, John Howland, H-O-W-L-A-N-D, a Houston businessman whose companies have suffered bankruptcy and who on one occasion was alleged by the owner of a company he ran of self-dealing and of misusing company funds, an allegation he denies. The three have worked together at Crest, where Mr. Howland acted as executive vice president. Mr. Bush, Mr. Howland, and Mr. Daniel have also been directors of a Swiss company called Silvermat, a financially troubled subsidiary of Crest that was set up in 2000 to supply the hospitality industry. Mr. Howland is listed as the chairman of Silvermat, and Mr. Bush and Mr. Daniel as having retired from the board. There is evidence that Mr. Bush has received financing and contacts for his personal business ventures from Mr. Daniel. Crest's company secretary, Joseph Peacock, a man involved in many of Mr. Daniel's other companies, was listed as one of the original investors in Ignite, Mr. Bush's educational software company. By the way, as we looked at in past broadcasts, Neil Bush was in Jeddah lobbying with members of the Saudi elite, at the same time as other people, including people who were a little more conscious of things, were declining to have anything to do with some of the people that were involved with this particular conference, including some of the Saudi princes, such as Prince Al-Walid, who were implicated in the funding of some of the September 11th-related activities. Continuing. According to a businessman in the Middle East, Mr. Daniel sometimes introduces himself as one of the founding members of Ignite, and has lobbied potential investors on Neil Bush's behalf. Mr. Bush went on a Middle East trip in early 2002 to seek contributions for his company. He has successfully secured funds from people connected to at least three ruling families in the Middle East. Other Middle Eastern businessmen said Mr. Daniel or others in his family had used Mr. Bush's name to secure investors in projects. Some of these have ended in disputes among those investors. Mr. Bush had written letters, including to Ali Abdullah Saleh, president of Yemen, recommending investments. The businessman said Mr. Bush opened doors with prominent figures in the Middle East, but they did not see him getting involved in details of the projects he was promoting. Quote, they fly around in private planes and get big meetings. When they hire Neil Bush, I don't know if he knows what's going on, said one. Today, Neil Bush's business partners have a new venture in keeping with the times. New Bridge Strategies was set up this year to help companies secure contracts in Iraq following the war. Mr. Howland is chairman and chief executive of the company,
while Mr. Daniel is a member of the advisory board. The company briefly hit the headlines this autumn because of the impressive roster of Republican heavyweights on its board, most of whom are linked to one or another of the Bush administrations or to the family itself. The company's website has not been shy about advertising its contacts in both the Middle East and Washington. The opportunities evolving in Iraq today are of such an unprecedented nature and scope that no other existing firm has the necessary skills and experience to be effective both in Washington, D.C. and on the ground in Iraq, it said. That phrasing has since been changed. The list of directors and advisory board members is indeed impressive. Joseph Albaugh, the chairman of the company, was the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, until March of 2003, and before that, chief of staff for George W. Bush while he was Texas governor. As national manager for the Bush-Cheney election campaign in 2000, he was one side of the iron triangle of aides credited with propelling him into the presidency. Ed Rogers, the company's vice chairman and director, was a top aide to George H.W. Bush while he was in the White House. Lanny Griffith, another director, also worked in Mr. Bush Senior's government and on his election campaigns. Haley Barbour, a former chairman of the Republican National Committee who was elected last month as governor of Mississippi, was on the board of Milestone Merchant Partners, a Washington-based private equity fund affiliated with Newbridge, according to the Newbridge website. A spokesman for Mr. Barbour, who was also close to the Bush family, said he resigned from that position in February. All three are partners at Barbour, Griffith, and Rogers, a Republican lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. The firm shares an office with Newbridge at 1275 Pennsylvania Avenue on the 10th floor. Milestone, meanwhile, is hardly bereft of political contacts itself. Richard Breeden, former chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and the man appointed to sort out the mess at WorldCom, is on the company's advisory board. So is Ed Mathias, co-founder of the Carlyle Group, the world's best-connected private equity firm, which some people have seen as a forerunner of Newbridge. Next to those names, John Howland and Jamal Daniel are relatively unknown. Together in many business transactions connecting Texas with the Middle East, they have been linked to contentious deals, some of which have ended up in court. Mr. Howland is a former U.S. Air Force officer. He failed to become a pilot because of a slight eyesight problem and ended his military career as a launch control officer in nuclear missile bunkers. He said he had met Mr. Daniel in about 1989. Mr. Daniel's family, Christians originating from northern Syria, is said to have been involved in the founding of the Ba'ath Party and sustained links with it in both Syria and Iraq, even after being expelled from Syria in about 1966 after Hafez al-Assad came to power. Mr. Daniel has told friends that when he was young, Tariq Aziz, later foreign minister of Iraq, was a visitor to the family home. Mr. Daniel attended Pepperdine University in the U.S., and then was awarded an MBA from the University of Texas at Arlington before settling down in Houston. With much of his family still in Geneva, Switzerland, where they settled after leaving Syria, he leads the family's U.S.-based wing and represents its businesses there. The family holds a sizable U.S. property portfolio via a range of interlinked companies, Uniteg, Finial, Carnavon, and Grailwood, as well as some energy businesses. According to businessmen who know him, Mr. Daniel boasts connections with the families of the rulers of at least five Middle East countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Syria, Yemen, and Lebanon. At a conference in Washington in April of 2000, Mr. Daniel was introduced as a person, quote, proud to call Yemeni President Saleh a friend, unquote. Before he became president and chief executive officer of Newbridge this year, Mr. Howland's business career had met controversy. In 1997, he was embroiled in a bitter dispute with his then-employer, Mohammed bin Isa al-Jaber, a Saudi businessman, over allegations that more than $12 million went missing from his company while Mr. Howland was in charge. In a lawsuit filed in Houston, Mr. Jaber said he had originally been approached with a business proposal by Mr. Howland while the latter was president of the Texas-based company American Rice Incorporated. The idea had been to set up a company in Saudi Arabia that would import rice from America from American Rice and then package it at a plant to be rebuilt in Jeddah, enabling the owners to sell it more cheaply than rival companies. In 1992, Mr. Jaber set up Rice Milling Trading Investments, or RMTI, and hired Mr. Howland and another Houston associate, George Pershall, giving them full authority to run it. Quote, "I placed full trust in John Howland to the extent that he was the sole signatory on RMTI's bank account, and expenditure made through him on RMTI's projects was in excess of $50 million, Mr. Jaber said in a 1997 statement, according to court records. Mr. Howland drew up a contract with American Rice to be the company's exclusive supplier. What Mr. Jaber did not know was that his top two executives were still working for American Rice, meaning that they were on both sides of the negotiating table. Mr. Jaber stated that Mr. Howland was receiving $250,000 a year for running RMTI and a further $100,000 from its supplier, American Rice. The result, industry experts told the court, was a highly unusual 50-year contract heavily biased in American Rice's favor. At the same time, Mr. Howland had a third role working for another company that RMTI saw as a potential competitor and which Mr. Daniel represented in the U.S. RMTI's investigators found business cards showing Mr. Howland and Mr. Pershall as representing this company, Levant Grain, which was constructing a rice mill in a free zone at the Syrian port of Tartus. Mr. Howland said on Thursday he had been an officer of Levant, and that Levant was wholly owned by Crest, Mr. Daniel's company. But he said there had been no conflict of interest. However, Mr. Daniel told the court he was an unpaid advisor to Levant, which was owned by a company linked to relatives of his. When the Jeddah plant was nearing completion, Mr. Howland set up a $12 million credit facility on behalf of RMTI with the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia to finance American Rice's sales. In 1996, a banker working for National Commercial Bank informed Mr. Jaber to his surprise that the $12 million letter of credit had been exhausted. Parenthetically, the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia was headed for a long time by the very powerful bin Mahfouz family, also business partners of Bush's and also allegedly financiers of Al-Qaeda. Continuing. In 1997, according to court documents, Mr. Howland told NCB that Mr. Jaber had financial problems, but that he and Mr. Pershall would be willing to take over RMTI once it had gone bankrupt. He had found, he said, interested financial backers. Howland indicated that he would do so only after the equity interests of Mohammed bin Isa al-Jaber had been wiped out, unquote, Donald Prescott, the banker he approached, said. This concerned me, since I knew Howland was still the senior officer of RMTI, whose major shareholder was Mohammed bin Isa al-Jaber, unquote. Through Mr. Howland and Mr. Pershall, RMTI also invested in two projects in the Caribbean of which Mr. Jaber said he was unaware. In one, it took a minority stake in the Antillean rice mills, which operated a rice mill in Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, at a price other company officials later judged to be far too high. It also financed construction of a butter plant in nearby Curaçao that was built but stood idle because it was never allowed to export to the European Union. RMTI subsequently found more than a dozen offshore bank accounts linked to these companies in the Queensgate Bank in the Cayman Islands, in Panama, and elsewhere. Mr. Jaber estimated his losses in these ventures had run into a further several million dollars. The case was settled after negotiations, with payments to Mr. Jaber totaling more than $3.5 million, and a judge ordered many of the documents sealed. Parties to the case say they are still constrained from talking about it because of a gag order. American Rice went bankrupt soon after. American Rice, together with Mr. Howland and Mr. Pershall, countersued RMTI. Carrie Blair, a lawyer for John Howland, described the allegations in the suit as totally frivolous, unquote. Mr. Howland said yesterday he did not know what happened to the $12 million letter of credit. He said RMTI alleged that American Rice took some of the money, which to his knowledge was not true, but they never made the allegation against me, unquote. American Rice is now under new management following its emergence from bankruptcy. So how did some of the best connected Republican figures in Washington end up in business with this controversial pair of Texas businessmen? The answer seems to be Haley Barbour. Like many agricultural firms, rice companies benefit from political connections. Mr. Howland met Mr. Barbour while the latter was at the Reagan White House. When Mr. Barbour left the administration, one of his first jobs as a consultant was for American Rice. He was hired by Mr. Howland. It was through him that Mr. Barbour got to know Mr. Daniel. Through a spokesperson, Mr. Barbour declined requests for an interview. What is clear is that he helped make the connection between Mr. Howland and Mr. Daniel and the Washington heavyweights that give New Bridge its political heft. His firm was also instrumental in bringing other companies into New Bridge's fold, including Diligence, a security firm set up by former U.S. and British intelligence officers that is affiliated to the company. Barbour, Griffith, and Rogers provided initial funding for Diligence, said Nick Day, a former U.K. intelligence officer and co-founder of the company. Like New Bridge, Diligence was also given space at BGR's office in Washington, D.C. BGR also provided the company with its well-connected chairman, Richard Burt, former U.S. ambassador to Berlin, as well as its impressive advisory board. Many of the names on that advisory board, including Carlyle Group co-founder Ed Mathias, overlap with those of both New Bridge and Milestone. The relationship between the companies became even closer after New Bridge found the investor for Diligence's new business in Iraq. In return for finding the investor, the Kuwaiti businessman and member of parliament, Mohammed al-Sakir, New Bridge got a minority shareholding in the new Iraqi security firm. Diligence Iraq had already escorted some of New Bridge's clients into Iraq. He said, "The idea behind the founding of the New Bridge shows an odd symmetry between Washington and the Middle East, that in both places, what matters is the ability to exploit connections to well-placed individuals." According to Middle East specialists, the disclosures about New Bridge will not help U.S. efforts in the region. Quote, "In the Middle East, it will be received as confirming the weary cynicism prevailing in the area about U.S. intentions in launching the attack on Iraq in the first place," said Richard Murphy, senior fellow on the Middle East at the Council of Foreign Relations in New York. And again, note this very interesting firm, New Bridge. Haley Barbour, the newly elected governor of Mississippi, is associated with it. One of the people associated with this business milieu that we've been looking at, again, Ed Mathias, co-founder of the Carlyle Group, and note the Milestone firm, closely affiliated with New Bridge Strategies of Haley Barbour. One of the key people involved with that is Richard Breeden, former chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and the man appointed to straighten out the mess at WorldCom. It is a WorldCom subsidiary, MCI, that has been viewed as being a very favored, an unnaturally favored investor in Iraq for some of their mobile phone contracts. So again, business as unusual. And the relationship here, again, Neil Bush with Jamal Daniel, and in turn to Mr. Howland, Haley Barbour, Griffith, Ed Mathias, Joe Albaugh, former head of FEMA, and others. And it is the structural economic relationships and the business relationships between powerful people in the Middle East and the Bush family that have basically served as not only the vehicle for effecting much of the terrorism that has taken, that has beset the world, but has also interdicted the scrutiny and attempts at basically at preventing, at neutralizing that terrorism. It is not necessarily that all of the people involved with these structural relationships are, quote, pro-terrorist, unquote, or some other sort of facile analysis, but rather when it's rather like a mosquito that is biting you. It's out to get the blood, but the malarial infection comes as a part of that transaction. The mosquito, however, is not necessarily biting its host in order to give it malaria. Nonetheless, disease is what results, and because of the very, very strong connections between the powerful interests in Washington and those in the Middle East, many of these connections go unexamined, let alone uninterdicted. I would also note, and we're going to take a look at this next week, that within these structural economic relationships, there are indeed people who are overtly and willfully conspiratorial and who are specifically using the impunity that results from these economic relationships as a platform for the effecting of malfeasance of the most extreme nature. And it is indeed these structural economic relationships that I believe has served as that have served as the vehicle for not only protecting what I call the underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground, but it is those structural economic relationships which in the end will be used for the destruction and or subjugation, economic, political, and physical, of the United States of America. In For the Record program number 431, again, we took a look at Marvin Bush, his connections with this same Middle Eastern petroleum and recycled petrodollar milieu, and we took a look at the Kuwaiti American Corporation, on the board of directors of which Marvin Bush sat. We also took a look at the fact that the predecessor of Ed Breeden, or the guy, who succeeded Ed Breeden of Milestone and Newbridge Strategies as head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, was none other than William Donaldson, a close associate of Jonathan Bush. Jonathan Bush, the uncle of the current seated president, is also on the board of directors of Riggs Bank, as we looked at in For the Record program number 432, and it is Riggs Bank that handles the accounts for 95% of the embassies and consulates in Washington, D.C., and it was in that bank that an account for someone allegedly involved with the events of September 11th was held. Again, Riggs Bank, and the following should not be forgotten, although the name of Jonathan Bush is not mentioned here in connection with Riggs Bank. It is in For the Record 431. Again, Desert Flowers, The Bushes of Arabia, Part 2. We're going to read now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, November 23rd of 2003. This is an article by Douglas Farah, F-A-R-A-H, of the Washington Post. It's headlined, FBI Demands Saudi Embassy Divulge Bank Records, subtitled Subpoenas and Terror Funds Probe Outrages U.S. Ally in Middle East. It reads in part, the FBI, in an unprecedented move that has strained relations with a close ally in the war on terrorism, has subpoenaed records for dozens of bank accounts belonging to the Saudi embassy as part of an investigation into whether any of the hundreds of millions of dollars Riyadh spends in the United States each year end up in the hands of Muslim extremists, U.S. and Saudi officials said. Skipping down. U.S. and foreign intelligence agencies have documented the flow of money to terrorist groups from organizations affiliated with charities that receive funds from wealthy Saudis and the Saudi government. Money for such charities often flows through the embassy's Islamic and Cultural Affairs Bureau. The subpoenas were issued several weeks after the May deportation of Fahad al-Tumeri, who had worked for the Islamic and Cultural Affairs section of the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles since 1996. Tumeri's visa was revoked, and he was deported because of suspected ties to terrorists, according to officials from the Department of Homeland Security. Again, the Riggs Bank, on whose board of directors Jonathan Bush, George W.'s uncle, is at the epicenter of these particular investigations, and again, some of the other Bush connections to the milieu of the events in and around September 11th. For the record, program number 431, Desert Flowers, Part 2, The Bushes of Arabia. And it is these connecting links, these structural economic relationships between the corridors of power in Washington and those in the Middle East that, again, serves as the conduit, the vehicle for the effecting of the financing of terrorism. We're going to read just a short section of an article that we're going to look at greater length next week. This is from the Washington Post. It's by Douglas Farah. This is from the Washington Post of Saturday, October 18th of 2003. Terror probe points to Virginia Muslims. Subtitled, Local Network Provided Millions in Financing, Agency Charges. It reads in part, a secretive group of tightly connected Muslim charities, think tanks, and businesses based in Northern Virginia were used to funnel millions of dollars to terrorists and launder millions more, according to court records unsealed yesterday. An affidavit from Homeland Security agent David Kane said that the SAFA group, also known as the SAR Network in Herndon, Virginia, had sent more than $26 million in untraceable money overseas, and that leaders of the organization, quote, have committed and conspired to provide material support to foreign terrorist organizations, unquote. The probe of the Herndon groups is the largest federal investigation of terrorism financing in the world, authorities have said. And the unsealing of Kane's report marks the first time the government has alleged the main purpose of the Virginia organizations, set up primarily with donations from a wealthy Saudi family, was to fund terrorism and to hide millions of dollars. In a five-year period, four groups in the network sent more than $26 million to the Isle of Man. The initial money to set up the SAFA group was $3.4 million hand-carried in 1980 from Saudi Arabia by Ibrahim Hasaballah, Kane said. The heart of the network in the early years was the SAR Foundation, named for Suleiman Abdulaziz Raji. While the SAR Foundation legally dissolved in December of 2000, Kane said the company maintained a bank account that continued to receive hundreds of thousands of dollars in wire transfers and deposits over the next year, making it a, quote, way station for money being routed around the world by the SAFA group, unquote. So again, remember the mosquito metaphor. The mosquito's out for blood, but you may get malaria or worse during the context of that, in the context of that relationship. And unfortunately, we all are going to have to make a trip to the blood bank if this continues to go uninterdicted. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL, linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website as well. There will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record 438 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com within a week or so of the airing of this program. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 438, Christmas Bushes, Business as Unusual. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.